You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
April 27th, 2019. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs, where snow fell earlier. A few suburbs north of me, there was even more snow. I was up there earlier this morning, and I couldn't believe. Well, they talked about it yesterday, but it was 62 yesterday, and it was hard to believe that it could change so drastically. Anyway, I'm really happy that you've joined me today. And at republicbroadcasting.org, I highly recommend that you also visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and ScreeningSandyHook.net. I invite you to visit our chat room, and that is located at spingola.chatango.com. If you wish to review the names of the guests that I've had the pleasure of interviewing on this program, simply visit spingola.com, click on the radio schedule button on the left, and choose the appropriate year, month, and you will see links to the guest websites. You will see other links that have relevant information, and you can go back all the way to 2010 to see who I've had on the program. And I've had the pleasure, the honor of having so many people on the program that have brought us so much wonderful, wonderful information, and that is also the case today. Our guest for the first 2 hours today is Roman Bistrionic, and he is the co-author with Dr. Suzanne Humphreys of Dissolving Illusions, Disease, Vaccines, and the Forgotten History. And the website of interest is dissolvingillusions.com. Roman, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, and you?
Good. It's not so nice here today as well. It got very cold, cloudy, and not so nice. But, you know, that's the way it goes.
Exactly, yeah. It's kind of different. We haven't talked for a while, but things really have not changed except the clamor, particularly lately, for more vaccines and more often. And the one that seems to be hitting the news recently is that is measles. And if you haven't had a measles vaccination recently, then boy, run into your doctor and beg him or her to give you a vaccine so that you can avoid this horrible, horrible, horrible disease that is sure to make you incredibly ill or even kill you.
Yeah, I know. That's in the news now. This happened a number of years ago. We had outbreaks, and so the same thing kind of happened then. So anytime there is a spike in the measles cases, this is going to happen. And that's kind of what I really put together a talk about, and I really want to talk about things you probably wouldn't read in articles or hear mostly on the radio or television, and those are usually very limited in their perspectives, you know, on especially on the TV and in articles. I haven't really kept up that much with what's been going on because I've been doing other things, but certainly there's a lot of articles about measles now and what you should do. There also seems to be an anger that permeates the coverage and a panic about the disease spreading and what that could mean. And I believe the anger comes from fear, and that fear comes from a lack of knowledge. So what I would like to talk about is some history and information that is not well known, and I hope it will put things in perspective and alleviate some of that anxiety. I'd like to use direct quotes from historical and scientific books and journals, and I think when you hear some of those and we talk about some of the data, what the history was really like and what the science was saying back then and is saying, then, you know, you can decrease some of that anxiety.
Right.
If anyone wants these references and the quotes, you can email me, or, I don't know, can we post these on the website? Or
absolutely.
All right, great. So you can either email me at romanbistrianic@gmail.com, and I'll send them to you. I think everyone should do their own research, and so this will give you a leg up, and then you can make decisions based on information. That takes time. I spent a lot of time doing this in the past. But if you just rely on what other people are saying, you're not really making an informed choice, in my opinion. I won't be able to talk about everything about, you know, this topic, but what I really want to do is give people a flavor of the history, what happened over time, what was life like in the 1800s, and what things changed to give us, you know, the world we live in today. So I'll just keep going. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So before our modern times, there were a lot of infectious diseases in Europe and in the Americas. At different times, people died in huge numbers from these diseases, and there was a bunch of them. There was typhoid, typhus, scarlet fever, diphtheria, whooping cough, tuberculosis. That was a big killer. That was actually referred to as consumption back then, because the way it wasted away and consumed its victims. Pneumonia, influenza, smallpox, and measles. They were all big killers. Measles is a viral infection. A lot of the other ones were bacterial, except for smallpox. And like many diseases, it resulted in lots of deaths over different decades. And so this article is from the New York Times, January 19th, 1908. It's called Measles Kills 1463 Children. And it says, the startling mortality among children from the little-regarded ailment of measles was indicated today by a statement issued by the State Department of Health, showing that in 1906 there were 1,463 deaths from it, 1,240 being children under the age of 5. In December alone, 2,807 cases of the disease were reported, and a search of the record shows that it kills 2.5 times more children than does scarlet fever. Another article, Vitamin A and Measles from Nutrition Reviews, Volume 58, Number 2, February 2000, page S46. And it goes, measles accounted for 11% of all deaths in Glasgow in the year 1807 to 1812. Case fatality rates were high. For example, during the years 1867 to 1872 in a Paris orphanage, 612 of 1,256, that's 49%, children who developed measles died.
Wow.
Yeah. So looking at the death, also known as mortality statistics, you can see, and I put these charts together based on all this data, and you can find them on dissolvingillusions.com /graphs. Now, during the 1800s and even into the early 1900s, measles was a big killer. So that's historically accurate. England was in the forefront of documenting mortality statistics and began gathering them in 1838. From 1838 until the year about 1900, death rates from measles oscillated up and down and reached around 60 to 70 per 100,000, or 600 to 700 in a million. These type of statistics really are represented by a number X per 100,000, where the number of deaths have been normalized based on population. You want to do that so you can compare from year to year, no matter what the population is, so you have a, you know, standard comparison. Then starting around the year 1900, there was a steady decline in deaths from measles, which reached a low of 0.1 to 0.3 per 100,000 by the 1960s. Or in other words, one to three in a million. So from that high of 600 to 700 a million, it was a decrease of over 99%, close to 100%. So the actual change is from 99.5 to 99.86%. That's obviously a gigantic decline.
Indeed.
Yeah,
and your graphs are wonderful. I've studied those graphs, looked at them, and of course those are available at dissolvingillusions.com, and I will post that link in the chat room.
Thank you.
Yeah, the graphs are
incredible. Great. Go ahead. Yeah, they're full color, and when we put it in the book, they're, you know, kind of black and white, not so nice looking. But yeah, you can look at these, examine them, and you know, make your own conclusions from them. But you know, the data is pretty clear from multiple countries that, you know, the mortality rate had declined tremendously. And you know, we can read articles that people were talking about from really the early 1900s on about this happening as they were experiencing it. And so I'd like to read some of those. This is from the Berkeley Daily Gazette, December 27th, 1935. All of the old menaces like typhoid, smallpox, measles, scarlet fever, whooping cough, and diphtheria have become minor causes of death. The chance is very remote indeed that any of them will ever again assume sufficient importance in the mortality tables seriously to affect the general death rate. So that's in 1935. Here's an article from American Journal of Infection Control, August 2001, page 204. And the article is Personal Hygiene and Life Expectancy Improvements Since 1850. And the quote is, between 1815 and 1900, the commonly recurring epidemics of cholera, smallpox, malaria, and typhoid were gradually brought under control. During the next 50 years, gratifying victories over such endemic diseases as tuberculosis, diphtheria, measles, and scarlet fever were witnessed. These diseases were less dramatic than epidemics, but each was among the leading causes of death before 1900. By the middle of the 20th century, except for the 1918 influenza pandemic, death from infectious diseases in Western industrial countries was no longer a major component of mortality statistics. Yeah, I have a whole bunch of quotes. I don't know if I should really read through all of them. But I want to read this one. Okay, this is from Vital Statistics, British Medical Journal, February 7th, 1959, page 381. In the majority of children, the whole episode has been well over, truly over in a week. In this practice, measles is considered a relatively mild and inevitable childhood ailment that is best encountered any time from 3 to 7 years of age. Over the past 10 years, there have been few serious complications at any age, and all children have made complete recoveries. That's over 10 years. As a result of this reasoning, no special attempts have been made at prevention, even in young infants in whom the disease has not been found to be especially serious.
Wow.
And one more. This is the British Medical Journal, July 11th. 1964, pages 72 to 73. This is measles and measles vaccination. Death from measles in Britain is now unusual. Furthermore, in one half of the deaths, there was an accompanying chronic disease or disability, which in the majority was described as a serious handicap. It is reasonable, therefore, to conclude that in the past 30 years, mortality from measles has been reduced to virtually the lowest figure possible. So what all these articles and the data shows that measles and other infectious diseases, that was once a huge and horrible problem slowly became much less deadly, and that by the early 1960s was really not a huge cause of concern. You can even find a 1960 episode of the Brady Bunch on YouTube about everyone in the family getting measles. And there was no panic or fear, but only a reaction to something that everyone just went through without any real problems, just as discussed in that 1959 British Medical Journal article where they said it was a relatively mild and inevitable childhood ailment. So that's what measles was like. It was a big killer by the 1950s, 1960s. Wasn't much of a problem, was considered, a minor problem.
And there were reasons for the outbreaks and for the difference in the way that it affected the body. And you address this in the book, and it's also on the website, that by having a clean environment, clean water, mm-hmm. fresh air, good food, 100 people not using the same restroom facilities, that it really didn't become that dangerous. And as you said, it's a childhood disease that typically, when a child gets something, the immune system kicks in, and that system becomes stronger. If a tree, a palm tree particularly, does not have the resistance and get strong from the wind, then it would not be able to grow and endure and to later withstand 100-mile winds. The immune system, in order to become stronger, needs to have something to help it along. Correct? I'm probably stating as well as you would.
No. Well, I mean, if you're already in a compromised situation where you're, don't have a strong immune system because you're being overworked, you're tired, you're eating, poisoned food, essentially, you just aren't nutritionally supported, then when you encounter something like that, your body just doesn't have a chance. And I think that's what was going on back then. And there was a lot of things that were really pretty horrible in the 1800s. It wasn't this romantic, people on top hats walking down the street with ladies with long flowing gowns, people having leisurely trips down the river on paddle wheel river boats. That wasn't really the norm. Life was actually very brutal, very difficult, and deadly for a lot of people. People working 12 to 16 hours a day in really horrible conditions. Children were, basically let loose. They didn't have parents to watch them. Their parents were overworked. They didn't have time for that. Children were working in factories and in mines as young as 4 years old.
Wow.
So, things were not what they are today. There were no labor laws, child labor laws. Houses were an abomination and often deadly. Food was poor nutrition at best, rotten or even deadly. There was no concept of sanitation or hygiene. There was no fresh water or clean places to go to the bathroom.
Right, and it was running in the street, right?
Right. Well, if you have no bathroom, it has to go out the window, if you have a window. Many places didn't have windows. So it was, extremely difficult. It was horrifying. And I could read some quotes from various publications about that, if you like. And it's just, when you read some of this stuff, it's hard to imagine. And I think the closest parallel is if you look at some of the poorest places on the planet now, where people are in shanty towns and they don't have running water or good food. That's the kind of conditions that were largely there.
Right. Wow.
I hear music, so I guess
yes.
We're breaking.
All righty. We are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you.
All right, welcome back. Our guest first 2 hours today is Roman Bistriani. He is the author, the co-author with Dr. Suzanne Humphreys of Dissolving Illusions, Disease, Vaccines, and the Forgotten History. The website is dissolvingillusions.com. All righty. We were talking about real life and how things really were. And it's,
yeah, so we're quite lucky we don't live like that. Well, there are people that live like that today,
right.
But in the Western world, that's been transformed. I can read a couple of quotes. I have quite a few. I can't go through them all. But so this is from Civilization and Disease, 1943, pages 38 to 39. The stenches from the horrible foul cellars and their infernal system of sewage must needs poison the tenants all the way up to the fifth story, the well-worn rut of the dead wagon and the ambulance to the gate, for the tenants died there like flies in all seasons, and a tenth of its population was always in hospital. This is from Jacob Riis, The Battle of the Slum, 1902, pages 23 to 25. The Tenement House Commission long afterward called the worst of the barracks infant slaughterhouses, and showed by reference to the mortality list that they killed one in every five babies born in them. So, you know, these were horrible.
Wow.
Conditions. Really just hard to imagine. Let's see, this is The Greatest Benefit to Mankind, 1997, page 399. For millions' entire lives, albeit very short ones, were passed into the new industrial cities of Dreadful Night with an all-too-typical sociopathology. Foul housing, often in flooded cellars, gross overcrowding, atmospheric and water supply pollution, overflowing cesspools, contaminated. Yeah. Poverty, hunger, fatigue, and abjection everywhere. Such conditions comparable to today's third world shantytown or refugee camps bred rampant disease, rampant sickness of every kind. Appalling neonatal infant and child mortality accompanied the abomination of child labor in mines and factories. Life expectations were exceedingly low, often under 20 years among the working classes. And everywhere, sickness precipitated family breakdown, pauperization, and social crisis. So that does not paint a pretty picture in any regards.
Right.
Here's another. Let's see. Okay, so this is from Western Civilization Beyond Boundaries, Volume 2, 2010, page 279. In manufacturing towns, factory chimneys spewed soot and everything was covered with dirt and grime. Smoke was a major ingredient of the famous London fog, which, by the way, wasn't really a fog. It was all the soot. Which not only reduced visibility, but posed serious health risks. Refuse, including the rotting corpses of dogs and horses, littered the streets. In 1858, the stench from sewage and other rot in London was so putrid that the British House of Commons was forced to suspend its sessions. See, this is another one, The Irrepressible Conflict, 1850 to 1865, 1934 was published, page 181. Milk sold in Chicago came from cows fed on whiskey slops, and their bodies covered with sores and tails all ate off.
Ugh.
A circumstance which enabled the editorial critic to explain why so many children die in Chicago. New York's milk supply was also largely a byproduct of the local distilleries, and the milk dealers were charged with a serious offense of murdering annually 8,000 children. So that was, you know, the food was just an abomination. There was no refrigeration, of course, so and people just weren't clean, so you were going to pass diseases all over the place. Let's see, one more. This is from Child Labor, American Economic Association, March 1890, page 16. Children of all ages down to 3 or 4 were found in the hardest and most painful labor, while babes of 6 were commonly found in large number of many factories. Labor from 12 to 13 and often 16 hours a day was the rule. Children had not a moment free, save to snatch a hasty meal or sleep as best they could. From earliest youth, they worked to point of extreme exhaustion, without open-air exercise or any enjoyment whatever, but grew up, if they survived at all, weak, bloodless, miserable, and in many cases deformed cripples and victims of almost every disease. So that is
not a pretty picture.
No. Life was during the times before the Western world was transformed. It was just horrifying and resulted in short life expectancy and diseases that killed millions.
Wow. All righty. We're going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back. Thank you.
are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon, my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great, thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, welcome back. Our guest today is Roman Bistrionic. He is the co-author with Dr. Suzanne Humphreys of Dissolving Illusions, Disease, Vaccines, and the Forgotten History. And the website is dissolvingillusions.com. Many of us had ancestors that experienced some of the same things that you're talking about. And it's, I guess we ought to be all thankful that we're here. And don't live under such horrific circumstances that our ancestors survived. And
right.
And people don't understand. They just don't have the frame of reference to understand or to do the research that you have done.
So when I started doing his research, and I dug into books at the library. No, I didn't know. How would you know? That's something you're typically taught. You're taught, kind of standard history, not this kind of stuff. And so, it definitely blew me away, and that's really what made me want to decide to that wasn't my first goal. I was just reading and reading and reading, and I was always fascinated with history and science. So that's how this all started.
Thank goodness for that and for your curiosity, because as you say, people don't know what they don't know. And to listen to the programming on television, that's kind of what they go by. And it's
it's pretty pervasive. It's usually quite limited, right? It's limited. I mean, there's good programs, but there's a lot of garbage. So now we saw that deaths were high, and then they went down. We know that life was horrible in the 1800s for a lot of people. There were people that were well off, and they lived good lives, but a lot of people didn't. So what happened was really a sanitary revolution, health revolution, and that started in the 1850s, and it was a lot of people, social activists, prison reformers, physicians, clergy, scientists, all came together over many decades to really put this all together. So there was a lot of work, and a lot of that was lost in the pages of history. Nobody really knows about all these sacrifices that a lot of people made to make life possible the way it is today. I'll just read one quote. Where's a good one? Right, so this is from American Journal of Infection Control, August 2001, page 205. This sanitary movement was instrumental in getting legislation passed in Great Britain during the 1850s and 1860s to create public health authorities with the power to regulate sewage collection, water supply, environmental nuisances, and a remarkable list of other relevant matters such as physician licensing and child labor abuses. I don't want to go through all these things. There's just too many. Otherwise, we'll run out of time. Okay, just one more. This is from Medical Brief, 1907, pages 482 to 43. Accordingly, the present generation is beginning to learn that, and will realize more thoroughly as time wears on, the fantastic idea with regard to contagious infectious disease is absolutely erroneous, and the many so-called unavoidable diseases are positively preventable. It is not true each individual must run the gamut of measles, scarlet fever, whooping cough, diphtheria, tuberculosis, and like, if proper precautionary measures be taken on the outset. Sunshine, fresh air, wholesome nutrition, exercise, rest, and hygienic mode of living are far more effective than all the subsequent medication in existence. Wow. That was by Charles E. Page, M.D.
Right.
There are people that realized that these things made a difference. Plumbing, hygiene, nutrition, pasteurization. Later on, electricity came in. Refrigeration started out with ice boxes and then changed to refrigerators. Housing standards, labor laws, child labor laws. All these things together is really, made a critical difference. That's what transformed everything. I'm afraid I'm going to run out of time to cover everything, but
we've got like 20 minutes during this period.
Sure. So now we'll come to the actual vaccine, which in the United States was introduced in 1963. So that by that point, you had a 98% decrease in mortality from the statistics. In England, because they began the statistics earlier in 1838, you again can see the high death rate, and it plummets down, and they began vaccinating in 1968. And again, the death rate was down by really over about 100%. And what to me was, what I found interesting is none of this was ever covered in any of the medical literature that I ever found. Yeah, so
I wonder why. That's interesting.
Well, I looked, but I haven't looked recently, but I looked for quite a few years, and I did find one article that showed measles death and incidence decline, but the goal was an article talking about measles vaccine. So the, you know, it wasn't really talked about. There was no discussion about why there was a decline before the vaccine. They talked about after the vaccine, and which really was, I think, a tragedy, because there was no lessons learned. Why did you have such a massive decline in death rate? And instead, you know, the focus became on the vaccine and not as a more holistic, you know, what can we do to really take care of this problem and maybe not even use a vaccine. But that became the focus over time, and it's been that kind of thing ever since.
Now, the information is not readily made available, and we seem to have people in the news, I guess it's Big Pharma, who are pushing vaccines. And what could be contributory to the children who are getting the measles now and allegedly dying from the measles? Is it compromised immune systems? And could that be from vaccines?
Well, here's one of the things that wasn't really talked about or explored a lot, and that is nutrition. And there were articles in the scientific literature talking about reduction of rates of mortality with vitamin A, for example. And here's an article on vitamin A supplementation and child mortality, a meta-analysis. This is in the Journal of the Journal of the American Medical Association, February 17th, 1993, page 901. Combined analysis show that a massive doses of vitamin A given to patients hospitalized with measles were associated with approximately 60% reduction of risk of death overall, and with an approximate 90% reduction among infants. So there's articles in the literature about that. There's also articles on vitamin C treatment, and this is from a doctor, Fred Klenner, Southern Medical and Surgery Journal, July 1949. During an epidemic of measles, vitamin C was used prophylactically, and all those who received as much as 1,000 milligrams every 6 hours by vein or muscle were protected from the virus. Given by mouth, 1,000 milligrams in fruit juice every 2 hours was not protective unless it was given around the clock. It was also found that 1,000 milligrams by mouth 4 to 6 times each day would modify the attack with the appearance of spots and fever. If the administration was increased to 12 doses every 24 hours, all signs and symptoms would disappear in 48 hours. So he discovered through his experiments with children that, you know, in his case, vitamin C could be just tremendous if you had measles. So, you know, you can help your child by following that type of protocol. And I think it's kind of, you know, it's a real tragedy that this information is never shared by anybody. So if your child is sick with measles, you know, either you didn't vaccinate or maybe you had a vaccine failure, these strategies could help a lot of people, and they could get through, you know, a disease much easier if they knew about this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, nutrition is, you know, the key.
Does the vaccine, the MMR, which is measles, mumps, and rubella, does it have the live virus in them? Of these three?
I believe so, but I really don't know for sure. I haven't really Unfortunately, I haven't really kept up with vaccine information in the last 5 years or so. I've been busy with what our next topic will be. But,
right. Now, so, Bruce Hilleman, really, he developed this vaccine, and Merck licensed it. And I think if you look in the ingredients, you see that it's very questionable. Aluminum and MF-59.
Well, there's certainly aluminum and other ingredients in there, and you know, I'm not going to speak to that right now because I'm not really kept up with that. But what is interesting is that one of the things that used to happen in the 50s and 60s, if you got measles, which you typically got when you were, you know, a child, you know, 3 to 6, 7 years old, is you would get it, usually mild, usually not a problem, very often, you know, kind of a standard childhood illness. And then you were immune for life. But that was a different type of environment. There was always measles in the air, basically. So you were being re-exposed your whole life. So you were always getting what they call natural boosting. Mm-hmm. The vaccine does provide pretty good protection, so that when you get it, you're not going to get measles too easily. And that's the reason, you know, the incidence has decreased greatly after they introduced the vaccine. But one of the problems is that the vaccine immunity wanes over time. So it's not a, you know, permanent solution. So what happens is over time you get what they call secondary vaccine failure. That can basically what it means is that the vaccine wears off. So then you get decreased immunity, which wouldn't have happened in the pre-vaccine era. And the problem with that is, here's an article. This is from the Proceedings of the Royal Society B. Implications of vaccination and waning immunity. This is in 2009. We can foresee that vaccination will have two conflicting effects. It will reduce the number of newborn susceptibles and hence should have some of the usual associated public health benefits, reducing the number of cases in young children. However, this reduction in cases will lead to a reduction in boosting and therefore a greater susceptibility to infection in older classes. When immunity wanes, vaccination has far more limited impact on the average number of cases. While the observation has clear public health implications, the dynamic consequences that interaction between vaccination, waning immunity, and boosting are far more striking. For high levels of vaccination, greater than 80%, and moderate levels of waning immunity, greater than 30 years, large-scale epidemic cycles can be induced. So, you know, what we're saying here is that over many decades, the potential is that your immunity wanes, and because of that, you start having a more susceptible population, and then you have, you know, greater epidemics breaking out.
Wow.
So, yeah. While the vaccine was quite successful in reducing incidence, which was, you know, kind of the goal. Actually, they thought they were going to eliminate it back in 1967. But, you know, so it, you know, has been successful doing that, but there's the other end of it that's not generally talked about. What happens when the vaccine becomes, you know, wears off? The other thing is that maternal antibodies in the pre-vaccine era, mothers would transmit their immunity to their children through placenta and through breast milk. And so children were, you know, babies were protected until they were, their immune system was sufficient to handle something like a measles. But now, because mothers aren't naturally infected with measles, they provide a weaker immunity to their children. And so this is from the Oxford Textbook of Medicine, 2005, page 357. Waning immunity may become an increasing problem as vaccine coverage increases because more mothers will have been vaccinated, and since they have not been exposed or had natural measles, they will transmit lower levels of maternal antibody. Thus, their babies become susceptible measles by 3 to 5 months of age.
Okay,
so whereas before you would have got measles when you were older and able to handle it, what could happen over time is weaker immunity is transmitted to your babies, and now they're susceptible at a younger age when they can't handle it.
Okay, so that answers that question. Why there's more deaths now, and also a lot of women
are breastfeeding,
and a lot of women are also having C-sections unnecessarily, so they miss going through the birth canal.
It's just
oh gosh, what a sad state of affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Alrighty, we are going to
break
a quick 3-minute break, and the next topic that you're going to talk about is incredibly interesting and of great interest to me and a lot of other folks. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's Angioprim.com, or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
Back with our guest Roman Bistrionic, and he has another topic of interest that he began looking at, and is something that we should all be concerned about, that we're going to talk about in the next hour. Give us a little preview.
I've been looking into the environment for about a number of years, and there's a lot of serious problems that we're facing as a, not only as a country, but as a planet. And I'll talk about that. it's a very difficult topic to talk about, actually. But we'll talk about that next hour. I did want to wrap up a couple of things in regard to measles, is that even in the 60s, there were people knew that, you know, we always talk about antibodies as a measure of immunity. That was not necessary for recovery from measles. You could get, there are people with conditions that they don't have any antibodies, and they contract measles just in the normal way, and they're immune too. So it's, there's a lot more to the story than I think we've, you know, kind of thought there was. I want, you know, I think this is important. Measles is a very contagious disease, you know, and everyone should understand that. And if you vaccinate or not, you should be, you should act in a responsible way, because the young children that are too young to have protection that would have been protected before in the pre-vaccine era are now susceptible. So they're at risk, and so are immune compromised people. So, you know, you have to act in a, you know, a responsible way. So you might have to, you know, consider quarantining your family if there's an outbreak. You should probably research vitamin A, vitamin C, especially if you have children. And, you know, everybody has their own situation. So, but people should really, you know, kind of dig into it and, you know, do the research. And, but, you know, understand that you're not living in isolation, that we live in a, you know, global community, that, you know, your, you know, decisions have consequences too. So I just want to make sure that, you know, people act responsibly, which I think a lot of people do. But, you know, it's not just, oh, I don't want a vaccine and then just kind of drop the ball on it. You know, you have to know, you know, what the consequences are and what you need to do.
Right. Well, thank you. I think that you've really done the research on this, and as I mentioned before, people should visit dissolvingillusions.com, look at the charts, share those charts with your friends, share the website with your friends, and I'm sure that that they will be very well educated for having visited tonight.
And email me and I'll send you. Well, I didn't read all the quotes, didn't have time. I'll send you all the quotes that have the references too, so you can get a leg up on that.
Sure. Yeah, just send me whatever links you would like, and I will put them up on the schedule page so that people can look at them. All righty, we're at the top of the hour. We will be right back.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s, along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.